This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yehiz Wuhib. Coming up on Africa News Tonight,
the UN Refugee Agency reports more than 3.5 million refugee children aged 5 to 17 did not attend school last year, to the detriment of their future and the future well-being of society, on what the UNHCR is calling an education crisis for refugee children.
That's Lisa Schlein reporting from Geneva. Details coming up.
Also, a humanitarian official says the complex crisis in the Lake Chad Basin will require sustained international support over the coming years. And it appears that any chance of a presidential election being held this year in the DRC has ended.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
Our top story, a top UN humanitarian official says while famine has been avoided in northeast Nigeria, the situation remains precarious. Undersecretary General for Humanitarian Affairs and Emergency Relief Mark Lowcock has ended a two-day mission in Nigeria. He says important progress has been made in delivering life-saving relief to millions of people. But he adds that the complex crisis in the Lake Chad Basin will require sustained international support over the coming years. Lowcock says 17 million people there require humanitarian assistance, including 8.5 million in northeast Nigeria. The humanitarian crisis followed the Boko Haram insurgency that began in 2009. More than 20,000 people have been killed and millions displaced. Also, thousands of women and children have been abducted. The UN official says he'll urge the General Assembly next week to maintain financial and political support for the Lake Chad Basin crisis and to work with the Nigerian government to bring stability to the northeast region.
Four West African countries are delaying a ban on importing sulfur-laden gasoline and diesel, also known as dirty fuels, because they pollute the air. Nigeria, Togo, Ivory Coast, and Benin had agreed last year to stop using them by mid-2017. Now, Reuters reports, the ban will not take effect until December at the earliest. The dirty fuels are prohibited in the West and in growing number of developing countries. They are linked to a number of diseases. Reuters says Nigeria has set up a task force to advise the government on the new rules. Togo and Benin reportedly are waiting to see what Nigeria does, while Ivory Coast has taken no action on the issue.
The flow of migrants from Libya to Italy has dropped sharply recently, and that's apparently due to a joint operation by the Italian and Libyan coast guards. AFP reports the crackdown on people smugglers, especially in Sabratha, has caused some gangs to close their businesses. Since mid-July, only about 6,500 migrants have reached Italy, a fraction of the arrival numbers recorded during the same period over the past few years. What's more, traffickers reportedly are getting ready to hand over to security forces about 10,000 migrants they had planned to smuggle to Europe.
The UN Refugee Agency reports more than 3.5 million refugee children aged 5 to 17 did not attend school last year, to the detriment of their future and the future well-being of society. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva on what the UNHCR is calling an education crisis for refugee children.
Children make up half of the 17.2 million refugees around the world, and many of them are missing out on a productive future because they do not go to school. The UN Refugee Agency warns neglecting the education of millions of refugee children will undermine the UN's Sustainable Development Goals, principally those targeting health, prosperity, equality, and peace. The UNHCR reports 91% of the world's children attend primary school, compared to 61% for refugee children. It says that number drops to below 50% for refugee children in poor countries. The agency finds those numbers drop precipitously as refugee children age, especially in the poorer countries. It says far fewer adolescents attend secondary school and enrollment in university is stuck at 1%. UNHCR spokeswoman Cecile Puyi tells VOA denying refugee children access to an education is short-sighted.
There is a clear need for more solidarity and for making sure that people who take refuge in low-income countries also have access to education. This is crucial. We know that these refugee children will one day go back to their home places and rebuild their countries, so they are the future. If we don't invest in their future, we don't invest in the world's future.
The UNHCR urges governments to include refugee children in their national education systems. It also calls for more efforts to ensure refugee children are taught by properly trained and qualified teachers. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Migrants and refugees in Turkey appear to have found a new route to Europe. The Associated Press reports some migrants are now trying to cross the Black Sea to reach Romania. Today, Romania's Coast Guard rescued more than 150 migrants from Iraq and Iran who were aboard a ship in distress. Last week, more than 200 migrants were found aboard two vessels in the Black Sea. The new route is being used because of a 2016 agreement between the EU and Turkey. The deal called on Turkey to tighten its borders and prevent migrants and refugees from sailing to the Greek islands.
The U.S. Supreme Court is allowing the Trump administration's travel bans on some refugees to run their course. The administration's 90-day travel restrictions on six mostly Muslim countries expires at the end of this month, and a 120-day ban expires in October. No word on whether the administration plans to extend or expand either one. The White House says it's pleased with the court's decision to block a lower court ruling that would have allowed 24,000 refugees to enter the U.S. However, that's not the end of the matter. The Supreme Court will hear oral arguments on October 10th on whether the travel restrictions are legal.
President Donald Trump recently ordered an end to the so-called DACA program, officially known as Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals. It allowed the children of undocumented immigrants to apply for U.S. work permits and deferred deportation proceedings, even if their parents had entered or stayed in the U.S. illegally. Such children are informally known as Dreamers. They are an estimated 800,000 Dreamers living in the U.S. today. Many are now successful adults who have lived in the U.S. almost all their lives and see themselves as fully American, except in a strict legal sense. VOA's Adam Phillips spoke with a leading immigrant advocate about what she sees as the negative impact of Mr. Trump's decision.
Attorney Carmen Maria Ray is deputy director of the Immigration Intervention Project at Sanctuary for Families. She says her office has been swamped with new work since President Trump's decision to deny immigration status and possible citizenship to the children of undocumented immigrants.
It is a petrifying time, not only for these children, but for their families and for their communities. These are children who've grown up in the United States. I mean, they are lawyers. They are business owners. They are people who serve in our military. They are really the best of America.
Ray adds that many DACA children were brought to the U.S. when they were very young and have no memory or experience of their country of origin. America is all they know.
Imagine what you would feel like if suddenly someone turned to you and said that you may very well have to leave everything behind in the foreseeable future. You just have to leave your entire life. The image that comes to my mind when I talk to them is refugees.
President Trump said in a statement he was phasing out the DACA program out of concern for the millions of Americans who are, in his words, victimized by this unfair system. He says the adult children of undocumented immigrants take jobs away from American citizens. And many DACA critics say that the nation owes nothing to the children of immigrants who entered the U.S. illegally or overstayed their visas. Ray disagrees on both counts. In her view, immigrant workers benefit the American economy for everyone. And she says that migration is a basic human right that should not be punished.
Just like other animals migrate, humans migrate because they have needs that cannot be fulfilled in their country of origin. The parents of these children never had the intent of doing anything wrong. And I don't think any of these parents would have taken the risks that they did and worked as hard as they have in the United States if they knew that their children's lives would be forever put on hold by not being able to obtain immigration status in perpetuity.
In any case, Ray says it's wrong to punish children for what their parents did. Many of her clients are angry at their parents for the insecurity they face now. This makes a family's suffering far worse.
Certainly there is now conflict in families. Their children didn't make the choice to come, but yet they are facing the repercussions of having done so. Without immigration status, there's no security. You can be picked up and put into a jail and be held there without recourse. And that is something that at least my clients have very much in the forefront of their minds at all times.
Soon after President Trump announced his administration would be phasing out the DACA program, he indicated his openness to revisiting the question in the future. Meanwhile, he wants Congress to come up with a replacement before March 2018. That's when some of the 800,000 Dreamers become eligible for deportation. Adam Phillips, VOA News, New York.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15, 580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
I'm Yehi Suhib, 17 past the hour. Here's a recap of our top stories. A UN humanitarian official says the complex crisis in the Lake Chad Basin will require sustained international support over the coming years. The flow of migrants from Libya to Italy has dropped sharply due to a joint operation by the Italian and Libyan coast guards. And a UN agency reports that there is an education crisis for millions of refugee children around the world. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
Well, it appears that any chance of a presidential election being held this year in the DRC has ended. AP reports Congo's Electoral Commission has only just begun registering voters in the Kasai region, the scene of much violence and displacement. A commission spokesman says the delay in voter registration there means a presidential election will not be possible this year. The government and the opposition had reached an agreement that allowed President Joseph Kabila to remain in office longer in exchange for the vote to be set in 2017. Some opposition groups say they will resist any effort to delay a vote. Well, France is urging Chadian authorities to press ahead with parliamentary elections. This after securing billions of dollars in pledges from donor countries aimed at helping to revive Chad's struggling economy. However, Chad's president Idriss Déby says the country's lack of financial resources meant elections would be postponed indefinitely. Déby was reelected in 2016 after gaining power in 1990 at the head of an armed rebellion. For further insight into this story, I spoke with reporter Catherine Field, who was in Paris.
He says they just don't have the money and doesn't have the financial resources. This is a country that has really been having a lot of problems with its economy because of security issues and also because of the fall in oil prices. Not many people believe that completely. They do say that there are questions of the Chadian president's own legitimacy and that really having these parliamentary elections, which are way more than a year overdue, that he's just not interested. That's the allegation, really, from the other side. France hopes that by having given, donated this money, contributed to this fund, this national development program, that will, if you like, push him into a corner, that the Chadian president just won't have any more excuses and he will have to hold parliamentary elections.
What is France's relationship right now with Chad?
It's a very interesting relationship at the moment, obviously, because on the one hand, you have got the Chadian president who does have these problems of legitimacy. It is seen as though he really hasn't come to power fairly, and he hasn't stayed in power fairly through the various elections that have been held since he took power. The question is, though, is that France is one of Chad's main economic partners. France is Chad's leading development assistance partner, but France really and truly needs Chad when it comes to security. Let's not forget that Chad is in an area of the world that is really struggling. There is instability that's come not just from within the country, from various other internal threats, such as different ethnic groups, but also security regionally. You're talking about the Nigeria-based Boko Haram Islamist group. That is a real source of concern for the region, and that's something that France would like Chad's help in getting on top of that. You've also got Chad as being one of the countries which is involved in the transit of migrants, which come up through various areas of Africa, and they go up to North Africa, and from there they try to make it to Europe. So France sees all that as a sort of something that could create instability to the area and something that will create instability in France. So France is really trying on many different levels to, if you like, have a better relationship, security and economic, with Chad, but at the same time, not look as though it's the old days when France propped up corrupt dictators or propped up unpopular, undemocratic regimes in the past. Difficult balancing act that France thinks that it's in enough of a position both supporting democracy and supporting national development within the country to be able to actually have the ear of those in power in Chad.
What would be the consequences of this continuous postponement of elections?
France sees it as just continuing instability, and it really feels that not just in Chad, but right across the Sahel region, there has got to be more democracy, more respectable governance, because without that, you're just not going to have economic and social stability. France, and this really also goes for the European Union based in Brussels, they really want to see more democracy, open government, accountability, because they think that if you have that, then all these other development programs that they have put money into have got more of a chance of success. They particularly don't like any sort of smell of corruption. They don't like the idea that any of this huge amounts of money that they're pouring into Chad could be siphoned off either through corruption or just through people who weren't elected and found their way into positions of power.
That was reporter Catherine Field in Paris.
Islamic State militants in Libya have grown bolder in recent weeks, setting up temporary checkpoints, attacking local forces, and taking over a village mosque. With the continued power vacuum in Libya, experts fear a resurgence of the terrorist group around its former stronghold of Sirte. The political and military rivals include General Khalifa Haftar, who commands the National Army, and Prime Minister Fayez Sarraj of the UN-backed Government of National Accord. Rhiannon Smith is the managing editor of the London-based group Eyes on ISIS in Libya. She spoke to VOA's Mohamed El-Shenawi about the threat of ISIS in Libya and what needs to be done.
We are certainly seeing a resurgence of some sort of ISIS south of Sirte. So we know that when they were defeated in December 2016 and they lost their territory, they, you know, the fighters that survived then fled south to this desert area, which is very underpopulated south of Sirte. And we have seen in recent months a few minor attacks where they have ambushed trucks that are going through this desert region. They have taken some fuel and some minor attacks on convoys of Misratans. However, the two attacks we have seen in the last 2 weeks, so this beheading of LNA soldiers and then the attacks in Old Folia, which is east of Sirte, is certainly worrying. And the fact that these have then been claimed in ISIS media and that there appears to be kind of a media resurgence of ISIS in Libya is certainly worrying. I don't think they're going to be a huge threat in the near term, and I don't think they will be able to retake territory, but it does seem that maybe they have strengthened a little bit and we will start to see more of these kind of attacks in that region.
Both Haftar's Libyan National Army and Misratan forces, which aligned themselves with the UN-backed government in Tripoli, say they are mounting frequent patrols to monitor Islamic State movements in the areas under their control. Would the two rivals unite to fend off a resurgence of the Islamic State group in Sirte?
I think it's unlikely that they will actually unite to meet this threat. Because even in Sirte, so when ISIS took control of Sirte, it was a huge threat. You know, they had controlled this huge amount of territory in central Libya. Even then, the LNA and the Misratan fighters fighting underneath the GNA did not unite. They both said they were against ISIS, but they didn't unite forces. So I think if it didn't happen at that point, it is unlikely to happen now. The other thing is that the area around Sirte is very politically charged. So it is likely that Haftar's forces may want to try and take control of Sirte. And therefore, rather than ISIS uniting these forces, it's actually more likely that with both forces kind of reinforcing their presence in the area, it's more likely to spark escalation and conflict between these two forces in that area rather than uniting against ISIS.
After Daesh was driven out in December by local forces and the U.S. air campaign, it was reported that most Daesh militants were killed in the nearly seven-month battle, but an unknown number fled into the desert and south and west, as you said. What is needed to ensure that this terrorist group would not have a stronghold on Libya again?
Well, you're right there. We don't know exactly how many fled into the desert, and it's likely that there aren't many fighters there currently. However, there is a danger they will reinvigorate, get more support locally, but also after the fall of Mosul and, you know, Raqqa in the future, we could see a sort of regrouping of ISIS fighters from the Levant and Tunisia potentially in this area. So I think in order to prevent them retaking territory, what needs to happen is that this area needs to come under sort of governance and stability. So the conditions that initially allowed ISIS to kind of take control of Sirte was the fact that it was essentially a no man's land. It became a kind of proxy battlefield for some of the rival militias. The government had no control, where there were very little basic services and people felt very marginalized and isolated. Essentially, there was no local power that could resist ISIS. And the danger is that given that, you know, political reconciliation efforts are not really, they're sort of stalled at the moment, and there is still potential for conflict between the LNA and the Misratan. There is a worry that if that happens and conflict re-escalates, that actually ISIS could use this opportunity to retake territory. So really, I think to stop this, it's about, you know, reinvigorating these governance systems and finding a political solution and a unification of Libya that can prevent these kind of pockets of essentially no man's land from emerging, from allowing jihadists like Daesh to take control instead of government.
That was Rhiannon Smith, the managing editor of the London-based Eye on ISIS in Libya. She spoke to VOA's Mohammed El-Shenawi. And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. Stay tuned for Straight Talk Africa with Shaka Sali coming up at 18:30 UTC. I'm Yehi Swuhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com. On behalf of our African News Tonight producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Misha Dubinsky, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, fresh off a three-nation Africa visit to the Democratic Republic of Congo, Zambia, and Tanzania, Shaka Sali talks about the fascinating people he met and the challenges he encountered, reporting on democracy in Africa. On the road with Shaka, on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
Hello, Africa. I'm James Butte, host of VOA's Daybreak Africa.
VOA.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you the news as it happens. Listen to Daybreak Africa Monday through Friday at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC. And our 5-minute newscast come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
VOAAfrica.com.
On VOAAfrica.com, the news updates never stop. Our primary goal is to keep you informed.
VOAAfrica.com, your trusted source for news and information.